From Press Communications, LLC, this is Jersey Shore Matters with Diane de Oliveira.
The tragic death of a 24-year-old New Jersey mother, allegedly at the hands of her abusive former partner, is again sparking conversations about domestic violence. Hi, I'm Diane de Oliveira, and joining me today is Janet Lee, a clinical supervisor with 180 Turning Lives Around, a nonprofit in Monmouth County that provides free and confidential help to survivors of domestic and sexual violence and their families. Thank you so much for being a guest.
I'm happy to be here, Diane. Thank you so much for reaching out.
You know, unfortunately, there are many more stories like that of Yasmin Uar. It was so heartbreaking to listen to her mother speak about her daughter making several attempts to leave an abusive relationship and the toll it takes on the entire family. You know, it's always easy for an outsider to question why a victim keeps going back. But Yasmin's mother said, you know, she was finally about to move again just days before Tyler Rio allegedly kidnapped her and their two-year-old son. So, Janet, you know, how does an abuser gain so much power over a victim?
That's something a lot of people are not aware of. It's not something that comes on overnight. It starts gradually, and often these patterns of behavior may be starting with young people still in high school who don't have much experience with relationships. So they slowly begin to isolate the victim, and that's one thing that is an early warning sign. If the boyfriend or partner is saying, I don't want you spending so much time with your friends, they don't like me, your family doesn't like me, they're trying to break us up, you know, I miss you so much when you're not with me. So it can be framed as a type of love, and we really need to educate our young people and adults about healthy relationships, and healthy relationships have room for others. Abusers have no room for others in their partners' lives, and that's an early sign.
You know, what makes it, though, so difficult for a victim to make a clean break? I mean, I know you just said that it starts out gradual, and it's kind of like love is used as the reasoning. When you're outside of a relationship or you're an outsider looking in, you know, it's frustrating because you'll be like, why can't you just break up with a person or get away from them? Is it because they've kind of become brainwashed, or, you know, maybe the person gets hit or mentally abused and then the person apologizes and they go back and then maybe it's something a little more the next time? What makes it so difficult for the victim to just walk away finally?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that. It is something that's asked of us and of survivors of domestic violence all the time. And the true answer is, Diane, they leave all the time. They leave all the time, like Yasmin left. What people don't realize is the leaving is one of the most dangerous times in a relationship with an abuser. One of the other high-risk times is when the victim is pregnant. Those are extremely high-risk times. So it's not that, oh, these people are not leaving. They are leaving and leaving, and often they are tracked, and the pattern continues. And yes, sometimes the survivor does go back. And what we need to realize is what you had mentioned, there is a huge component of the abuser using power and control and something called coercive power to wear away the survivor's just sense of self, their sense that they can make a good decision, that they can be a good mother, that they could walk away and someone would believe them. Survivors really convince their partners, the abusers convince their partners that there is no way out, that they need to stay with them. And sometimes they'll use threats against families and others to keep their victims in the relationship. And these days with technology, they can follow in so many ways through GPS, sometimes GPS put into children's toys. So leaving is happening all the time, but leaving safely and completely is really challenging. And we work closely with survivors of domestic violence to achieve that. And it is quite an endeavor, but I always commend the survivors for every step that they take. It is something that's very courageous. And we need to kind of flip that view of survivors from victims who don't know how to leave to victims of crime who are taking every step possible to move forward to the best of their ability. And sometimes they say, I've got to stay because of the children.
I can't even imagine how hard for someone who thinks they're in love with the abuser, how hard it is to break away. But then when you factor in children, it must make that decision, you know, tenfold. And to think, where am I going? Especially if you don't have a support system. In Yasmin's case, she did have a family. Her mother did say that, you know, she did try to leave several times. The family was supportive of her every time she went back or, you know, back and forth. But what if you don't have anyone you can really trust or turn to?
I think what's really important is for everyone to know there's someone to turn to every minute of the day, every day of the week. We have a 24-hour hotline here in Monmouth County at my program, 180 Turning Lives Around, and there's national hotlines across the country. They always have someone who can give them support and non-blaming support. That's really important. If they feel they're going to be blamed, or as in the past, sometimes they were called, protective mothers, and they were scared to reach out because someone might blame them and say, you're putting your kids at risk. We're going to remove the children. Now, the truth is, especially here in New Jersey, we've made great progress in working with the Department of Children Protection. They will work with the partner, and often seeing that the mother, sometimes it's a father who is a victim, is equally a victim as the children, and they work on safety planning and trying to see them not to be blamed, but to be supported and protected. And that's what we do, and we have some joint programs with child protection. So that can reduce some of the fear for women with children who want to leave a violent relationship and how to do it. The other thing we do is through really building up their self-esteem, their sense of self, their sense that they can make a difference in their children's lives, in their own lives. And we do that in a variety of ways. First, we start with believing them. Many of their friends and community members, or maybe members of their faith community, will say, oh, he's an all right guy, or he's a good guy, or I don't believe it, or, you know, they sometimes don't support the survivor in the way that's helpful. But then we also work with them on having an accurate view of the risk. So there's something called a danger assessment that we do with every person who calls who has a history of abusive relationship. But it's a self-assessment, so they can see themselves what are some of the high risks. And strangulation, which unfortunately was something that happened in this tragedy that you mentioned with Yasmin. Strangulation is one of the highest indicators of future homicide. And we are letting survivors know, Diane, really everything we know about domestic violence. We educate. And when they see that that's a risk factor and some of the other things that we talk about, they're more able to say, hold on, if I continue on this path, if I'm not thinking in terms of how this is escalating, I'm likely not to be able to be there for my children.
Right.
And that surely is very impresses on them the importance and the value of learning everything they can about what safety measures might help, including a safe house. Because as we mentioned in our various media presentations on this tragedy, I think an order of protection was something that Yasmin used, and it can be very helpful, but it is also a piece of paper.
Right.
It is helpful for abusers who don't want to be arrested, who have some kind of sense of the law, but for people who are intent on controlling, domineering, threatening, harassing, abusing their partners, it may not be enough.
Right.
So that's where our confidential safe house may be a real lifesaver. So by reaching out to the domestic violence hotlines that are available, we can work with the individual survivor to see what's going to work for them. Not everybody wants to go to a safe house. Not
right.
Everybody wants to go to court. So we work with them on where they are. And to be honest, Diane, we commend them for everything they've done so far.
Absolutely.
That's what they don't hear. You know, they
right.
hear from their abuser that they're stupid or ugly or incapable or can't make money. No one can understand them. They're crazy. And so it's hard to reach out if you believe they're the abuser and what he's telling them.
Janet, so, I just want to remind our listeners real quickly of who you are. I'm speaking with Janet Lee. She is a clinical supervisor with 180 Turning Lives Around. It's a nonprofit in Monmouth County that provides free and confidential help to survivors of domestic and sexual violence and their families. Does an abuser realize what they are doing, or do they become so irrational that they don't see how they're acting?
That's a good question. There are abusers that are extremely violent, and abusers who just believe they have to behave this way because of they're the man in the relationship, or they need to be in control. So there's a variety of ways of answering that. I think many of the abusers are not self-aware. You know, not really aware of what they're doing and their pattern. Some of them will say, I love my wife, partner, girlfriend. And again, abusers can also be female. And they really are not necessarily aware of all the steps they are taking and the cruelties and the danger and the, you know, really risk to life. Because what we know is domestic violence increases in frequency and severity over time. It doesn't go away even if both parties want it to go away. Say there was an incident of abuse. Many times after, there's something called the honeymoon period where the abuser may apologize and the victim will feel, wow, he's going to do better. He's going to get help for drinking. He's going to listen and not react so quickly. He's going to be more aware of not exploding. But the truth is people have a pattern of behavior. Unless there's a real intervention that gives them another way of responding or understanding their emotions or the role that they can play in the family without domineering and abusing, it doesn't change. In fact, it gets worse, even if both parties wish it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because wishing does not change behavior.
Right. Now, Janet, we hear so many times about, you know, counseling for the victims and things like that. Are there situations where an abuser has been able to turn around and get help and actually come around and realize their behavior is illegal and wrong?
Yes. There has been, and here in Monmouth County and throughout New Jersey, there's something called batterer intervention programs. This is different than anger management. So many people talk about anger management, but abusers choose to abuse their partners. They may not have an anger problem at work or with their friends or with colleagues or in their faith community. It's a targeted type of abuse. So anger management is not appropriate, but there is batterer's intervention. And in those situations, trained counselors work with the abusers, males or females, to help them look at their behavior. Sometimes there has been early abuse perpetrated on that person that gave them a pattern of, this is how families act, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I was abused as a child, and now I'm not going to take it anymore. Or they might have believed that somehow being a man was always being in control, never being scared or unsure or anxious or frustrated, and really trying to learn how to have a healthy relationship. And yes, I've seen it. I've seen somebody who went through a batterer's intervention program who told me I treated her like an animal, and he was able to see clearly that there were other paths forward and that, his behavior was inexcusable and dangerous and illegal. But I have to say, just going through a program, like just going through a drug and alcohol recovery program, does not mean that behaviors will change.
Right.
We hope so.
Yeah.
We hope so. And we refer and judges refer. What doesn't work is couples counseling. Many times people are feeling, oh, they don't communicate, this kind of thing. But abuse actually can be exacerbated by couples counseling, because the abuser often persuades the counselor how awful his partner is and how much she needs to change. And then it can be two against one in a couples counseling. Because let's face it, you can't be honest in a couples counseling session if you're going home in the car with your abuser.
Janet, we're almost out of time. I just wanted to know, are you noticing an increase in calls to 180 Turning Lives Around hotline since the incident involving Yasmin?
You know, Diane, it's really too early to tell. We did have a strange thing happening during COVID where people were not calling because they didn't have the freedom and confidentiality to call with so many people all housed together and when people lost their jobs. But right now it's really too soon to tell, but this is a way to honor Yasmin, to get the word out. And I do believe it will encourage not only survivors to call, but perhaps friends of survivors, families, to find out what's available. Our services are free. Our services are confidential. We are taking always an empowerment, strength-based approach. So even people who aren't sure if it's abuse or aren't sure they want help, they can call and we'll just meet them where they are. But get back to me soon, and I'll probably be able to answer that question. But right now, we know that it's so prevalent. In fact, survivors who suffer strangulation, like Yasmin, are 7 times more likely to be victims of homicide in the future. So we really need to get the word out and take all types of domestic violence seriously before they rise to the level of homicide and serious injury.
If you would just give out the hotline number again, if anyone is listening.
The 180 Domestic Violence Hotline, you can call 888-843-9262. And again, it's confidential, and we'll work with whatever the caller wants help with. We do not coerce. We do not have a sample type of approach for everyone. We try to find out what that client wants, what that caller needs.
Janet Lee, thank you so much. She is a clinical supervisor with 180 Turning Lives Around. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, Diane.
You can hear Jersey Shore Matters with Diane D'Oliveira every Sunday morning on Press Communications LLC.